Introduction to EMG hardware. Biofeedback represents a fascinating intersection of biology and technology, enabling us to observe the normally invisible processes occurring within our bodies. Think of it like having a window into your muscle activity, but instead of literally seeing through your skin, we use sophisticated electronic equipment to detect, process, and display these biological signals. This technology can reveal everything from the subtle contractions of facial muscles during stress to the powerful engagement of leg muscles during athletic performance. Many practitioners initially view biofeedback equipment with trepidation. These mysterious black boxes seem to stand between them and their patients. However, understanding the basic principles of how these devices work is crucial for providing effective care. Just as a carpenter needs to understand their tools to build effectively, healthcare providers need to grasp the fundamentals of biofeedback instrumentation to use it safely and effectively. Technicians and their supervisors must understand the science, instrumentation concepts, and protocols that form the foundation of biofeedback. A technician who is unfamiliar with the function of a box cannot provide safe and effective training. Let's use the electromyograph, EMG, as our primary example. While we'll focus on EMG, many of these concepts apply equally to other biofeedback modalities like EEG. The EMG allows us to measure electrical activity in muscles, which has applications ranging from stress management to athletic training to rehabilitation. Consider a physical therapist working with a patient recovering from knee surgery. The therapist needs to help the patient rebuild quadriceps strength, but the patient has difficulty engaging the muscle properly. Using EMG biofeedback, the therapist can show the patient exactly when they're activating the quadriceps versus compensating with other muscles. This real-time feedback helps the patient develop better muscle control and speeds recovery. Or imagine a psychologist helping a client with chronic tension headaches. By placing EMG sensors on the forehead muscles, the psychologist can show the client their level of muscle tension and help them learn to consciously relax these muscles. Without understanding how to properly place the sensors, set appropriate sensitivity levels, and interpret the readings, the psychologist wouldn't be able to provide this valuable feedback. The technology can seem daunting at first, but breaking it down into digestible concepts makes it much more approachable. Understanding these fundamentals transforms how practitioners approach patient care. With proper knowledge of biofeedback instrumentation, clinicians can make informed equipment purchases, operate devices effectively, identify and resolve technical issues, and interpret readings with confidence. This expertise directly translates to improved patient outcomes across various therapeutic scenarios. Think of learning about biofeedback instrumentation like learning to drive a car. You don't need to be an automotive engineer, but understanding basic principles like how the accelerator, brake, and steering wheel work together makes you a better driver. Similarly, understanding the basic principles of biofeedback instrumentation will make you a more effective practitioner. This exploration of biofeedback technology bridges the gap between mind and body, making invisible physiological processes visible and controllable. In our journey through this material, we'll examine how biological signals travel from their origin in the body to their appearance on your computer screen, always keeping in mind how this knowledge translates to better patient care. Whether you're a seasoned practitioner or new to the field, understanding these concepts will enhance your ability to leverage biofeedback technology for optimal therapeutic outcomes. Biological signals and their measurement. The foundation of biofeedback lies in our ability to measure biological signals that reveal the body's internal state. These signals come in two distinct varieties: those we can measure directly and those we detect indirectly. Understanding this distinction helps practitioners grasp both the capabilities and limitations of their biofeedback equipment. Direct measurements provide immediate access to the biological signal of interest. When we place EMG electrodes over a skeletal muscle, we're directly measuring the electrical activity generated by that muscle's fibers. However, it's crucial to understand that even these direct measurements don't tell the whole story. For instance, while an EMG directly measures electrical activity, it only indirectly indicates muscle force or movement. A practitioner working with an athlete might see high EMG readings that don't necessarily correspond to effective muscle recruitment or optimal movement patterns. Consider a physical therapist working with a patient on shoulder rehabilitation. The EMG might show significant electrical activity in the deltoid muscle, but this direct measurement doesn't reveal whether the muscle is generating appropriate force or if the movement pattern is biomechanically sound. The therapist must combine EMG readings with clinical observation and other assessments for a complete picture. Indirect measurements, by contrast, require our equipment to detect one property to infer another. Temperature sensors, for example, measure changes in electrical resistance to determine skin temperature. This indirect measurement serves as a proxy for peripheral blood flow, which itself indicates autonomic nervous system activity. A biofeedback practitioner helping clients with stress management might track these temperature changes to gauge relaxation responses, understanding that they're observing the end result of a complex physiological cascade. The relationship between direct and indirect measurements becomes particularly important in clinical settings. A psychologist working with anxiety patients might use both direct EMG measurements of muscle tension and indirect temperature measurements of peripheral blood flow. The combination provides a more complete picture of the client's stress response than either measurement alone. Signal strength varies dramatically across different biological measures. While muscle action potentials inside the body are measured in millivolts, thousandths of a volt, by the time these signals reach our surface electrodes, they've typically diminished to microvolts, millionths of a volt. This dramatic reduction occurs through a process known as volume conduction, where the signal dissipates as it travels through the body tissues. Understanding this concept helps practitioners appreciate the importance of proper electrode placement and skin preparation. We're trying to detect incredibly tiny signals reliably. In clinical practice, the distinction between direct and indirect measurements influences how we interpret and use biofeedback data. For instance, when using EMG feedback for muscle relaxation training, we directly measure electrical activity, but indirectly infer the patient's relaxation state. A client might show reduced EMG activity in their frontalis muscle, but still report feeling tense, reminding us that biological signals are just one piece of the therapeutic puzzle. This understanding of biological signals forms the foundation for everything else we'll discuss about biofeedback instrumentation. Whether we're considering electrode placement, signal processing, or display options, our decisions flow from the fundamental nature of the signals we're trying to measure and what they can tell us about our client's physiological state. Electrodes, the critical interface. Electrodes serve as the vital bridge between our clients and biofeedback equipment, acting as sophisticated detectors of biological signals. Far from being simple metal contacts, electrodes are precisely engineered transducers that convert one form of energy into another. In this case, the ionic current from the body is transformed into an electrical current that our instruments can measure. The journey of a muscle signal to our equipment begins with a phenomenon known as volume conduction. When muscle fibers contract, they generate electrical potentials that spread through the body's tissues like ripples in a pond. The interstitial fluid surrounding our cells acts as an excellent conductor, allowing these signals to travel considerable distances from their source. However, this process comes with a cost. Signal strength diminishes dramatically. A muscle action potential that starts at several millivolts might register only microvolts by the time it reaches our surface electrodes. This is why proper electrode placement and preparation are so crucial for accurate measurement. The industry standard for surface EMG measurement is the floating skin electrode, an elegant solution to several technical challenges. Picture a metal disc slightly recessed in a plastic housing, with the space filled with conductive gel or paste called an electrolyte. This design is far from arbitrary. It prevents direct metal-to-skin contact, which can create movement artifacts when the electrode shifts during client movement. The electrolyte maintains consistent electrical contact even during moderate movement, much like how shock absorbers smooth out a bumpy road. Pre-gelled disposable electrodes have revolutionized clinical practice by simplifying the application process while maintaining high signal quality. These electrodes come with the optimal amount of conductive gel already applied and feature a strong adhesive backing. While they cost more than reusable electrodes, they save valuable clinical time and reduce infection risk between clients. The chemistry at the electrode-skin interface is fascinating and crucial for good recordings. When an electrode contacts its electrolyte, a complex dance of ion exchange begins. The metal surface donates ions to the gel while receiving ions in return. This ongoing exchange enables reliable signal conduction. However, if chemical reactions create separate positive and negative charge regions at the metal-gel interface, polarization, signal quality suffers. This is why modern electrodes often use materials like silver/silver chloride or gold that resist polarization. Most EMG applications utilize a three-electrode arrangement, consisting of two active electrodes and one reference electrode. Think of this setup like a stereo system's speakers and ground wire. The active electrodes, placed over the target muscle, act like a dipole antenna receiving FM radio signals. The reference electrode, positioned over electrically quiet tissue, provides a baseline for comparison. This arrangement enables our equipment to measure the voltage difference between the active electrodes while utilizing the reference to minimize common mode interference. Proper electrode placement requires solid knowledge of muscle anatomy and function. For example, when monitoring the upper trapezius muscle for stress management, the active electrodes should be placed along the muscle belly, parallel to the muscle fibers, approximately halfway between the shoulder and neck. Incorrect placement, such as being too close to the tendon or at the wrong angle, can dramatically reduce signal strength or pick up activity from unwanted muscles. The distinction between monopolar and bipolar recording deserves special attention. Monopolar recording uses one active and one reference electrode, while bipolar recording adds a second active electrode. While monopolar recording might seem simpler, bipolar recording offers superior noise rejection and more comprehensive muscle monitoring. It's like having stereo versus mono sound. Both work, but stereo provides richer information. Site preparation and signal quality. Proper site preparation and impedance testing represent the foundation of quality biofeedback recording. Think of this process like preparing a canvas for painting. Just as an artist can't create a masterpiece on a dirty or poorly prepared surface, we can't obtain reliable biofeedback measurements without careful attention to the electrode-skin interface. Site preparation begins with understanding what we're trying to achieve. The outer layer of our skin, the stratum corneum, consists largely of dead skin cells that create significant electrical resistance. This natural barrier, while excellent for protecting our bodies, poses a challenge for biofeedback measurements. Additionally, skin oils, lotions, and environmental dirt all interfere with electrode contact. Our goal is to reduce this interference while maintaining client comfort and skin integrity. The preparation process follows a systematic approach that any clinician can master. First, inspect the site for any breaks in the skin, rashes, or other conditions that might contraindicate electrode placement. Next, clean the area with alcohol to remove oils and dirt. Once the alcohol evaporates, you can gently abrade the skin surface to reduce impedance. Think of this like sanding would before applying paint. You're creating a better surface for electrical contact while being careful not to damage the skin. This brings us to impedance testing, perhaps the most crucial yet often overlooked aspect of biofeedback setup. Impedance represents the opposition to current flow at the electrode-skin interface. In bipolar recording, we measure impedance between each active electrode and the shared reference. The goal is to achieve readings below 10 kiloohms with a difference of less than 5 kiloohms between sites. These aren't arbitrary numbers. They ensure that 99% or more of the biological signal reaches our equipment. Consider a clinical example. A psychologist working with a client on muscle tension headaches places EMG electrodes on the frontalis muscle. Despite careful placement, the readings seem unusually low. Impedance testing reveals one site at 8 kiloohms and another at 15 kiloohms. This imbalance allows artifacts to contaminate the recording because the differential amplifier can't properly reject common mode interference. After additional site preparation to balance the impedances, the readings become more reliable and therapeutic progress can be accurately tracked. The relationship between impedance and signal quality is particularly evident in what's called the electrode contact artifact. When impedance is high due to poor preparation, EMG activity might never drop near zero even during complete relaxation. This can frustrate both clinician and client, as it becomes impossible to distinguish genuine muscle tension from poor electrode contact. I've seen cases where clients became discouraged because they couldn't achieve their relaxation goals, only to discover the problem was technical rather than physiological. A special consideration is the gel bridge artifact, which occurs when electrode gel smears between closely spaced electrodes, creating an electrical short circuit. This results in abnormally low readings that don't reflect actual muscle activity. Think of it like accidentally connecting two electrical wires. The current takes the path of least resistance through the gel rather than measuring the biological signal. Proper electrode spacing and careful gel application prevent this problem. Modern biofeedback systems often include automated impedance checking capabilities. However, understanding the manual process helps clinicians troubleshoot when automated systems fail or yield questionable results. It's like knowing how to manually check your car's oil, even if it has an electronic gauge. Sometimes the basic approach provides the most reliable information. Signal processing, from raw signal to meaningful feedback. Signal processing transforms the tiny electrical potentials detected by our electrodes into meaningful information that both clinicians and clients can use. This transformation involves multiple stages, each serving a specific purpose in extracting useful information from what begins as an extremely weak and often noisy signal. Think of signal processing like taking a photograph in challenging conditions. Just as a photographer might need to adjust exposure, remove noise, and enhance contrast to create a clear image, our biofeedback equipment must amplify the signal, filter out interference, and present the information in a comprehensible way. Let's explore how this happens. The journey begins at the input stage, where the signal first enters our equipment. Here, we encounter a critical specification called differential input impedance, measured in gigohms, billions of ohms. Modern equipment achieves around 10 gigohms, an incredibly high resistance that ensures almost all of our biological signal enters the device rather than being lost. This high impedance acts like a very wide door, allowing even the weakest signals to pass through while maintaining their integrity. Amplification comes next, typically occurring in several stages. The first stage, called the preamplifier, is particularly crucial. Many manufacturers now place this stage right in the sensor housing to minimize signal loss. Consider a recording studio. Microphone preamps are placed as close to the microphone as possible for the same reason. The signal then undergoes further amplification through differential amplifiers, which perform a clever trick. They boost the difference between two inputs while rejecting signals common to both. This differential amplification provides our first line of defense against artifacts. Imagine two people trying to hear a quiet conversation in a noisy room. If they each wear a microphone and subtract what both microphones pick up, the room noise, they're left with just the conversation they want to hear. Our differential amplifiers work similarly, subtracting common noise from our desired signal. The effectiveness of this noise rejection is measured by the common mode rejection ratio, CMRR, expressed in decibels. A CMRR of 100 dB means signal is amplified 100,000 times more than noise. Impressive, but modern equipment can achieve even better performance with ratios of 180 decibels or higher. This specification becomes particularly important in electrically noisy environments like hospitals or clinics with multiple electronic devices. Filtering represents another crucial stage in signal processing. Bandpass filters select the desired frequencies while rejecting others. For EMG, we typically use either a narrow 100 to 200 Hz or wide 20 to 500 Hz bandpass. This choice isn't arbitrary. It reflects where the most meaningful EMG activity occurs. Think of it like tuning a radio to a specific station while excluding others. The choice between narrow and wide bandpass settings has important clinical implications. A narrow bandpass might be appropriate when working in a noisy environment or when nearby muscles might contaminate the recording. However, a wide bandpass often provides more accurate measurement of muscle activity, particularly during stronger contractions. This is because increased muscle activation recruits more motor units and fast twitch fibers, producing more high-frequency components in the signal. Advanced signal processing and display. After filtering, our EMG signal still isn't quite ready for display. The filtered signal alternates between positive and negative voltages. If we tried to average these directly, they'd cancel out to zero, losing valuable information about muscle activity. This is where rectification comes in, converting our bipolar signal into a unidirectional one. Think of rectification like counting footsteps. Whether someone steps up or down from their starting position, each step represents movement. Similarly, whether our EMG voltage goes positive or negative, both directions represent muscle activity. Rectification ensures we capture all this activity by making everything positive. Manufacturers use either half-wave rectification, keeping just the positive or negative portions, or full-wave rectification, flipping the negative portions positive. Full-wave rectification provides more complete information about muscle activity. Before we can measure the rectified signal strength, we need to convert it from analog, continuous, to digital, discrete, formed through a process called analog-to-digital conversion. This process samples the signal at fixed intervals, like taking snapshots of a moving object. The sampling rate must be at least twice the highest frequency to be measured. This is known as the Nyquist theorem. For EMG, which contains frequencies up to 500 Hz, a minimum sampling rate of 1,000 samples per second is required. The resolution of our analog-to-digital converter, measured in bits, determines how finely we can measure voltage changes. A 16-bit converter can represent 65,536 different voltage levels, while a 24-bit converter manages over 16 million levels. Higher resolution allows detection of smaller changes in muscle activity, particularly useful when working with subtle muscle tension or during relaxation training. Integration represents the final major processing step. An integrator measures signal strength over time, producing the values we typically see displayed. Different integration methods exist: peak-to-peak, peak, root mean square, RMS, and average, each providing slightly different information about muscle activity. RMS has become the standard for EMG measurement because it provides the most statistically meaningful measure of signal power. These process signals then need to be displayed in ways that facilitate learning and progress. Modern biofeedback systems offer various display options. Analog displays show continuous changes, like a moving line graph or a rising/falling bar. Digital displays provide precise numerical values. Binary displays indicate whether activity is above or below a threshold, useful for simple feedback goals. Power spectral displays break down the signal into its component frequencies, particularly valuable in research or when analyzing muscle fatigue. Time constants affect how quickly displays update, typically ranging from 0.5 to 2 seconds. Shorter time constants show rapid changes but can appear jumpy, while longer ones provide a smoother display but may miss quick changes. The choice depends on your clinical goals. Rehabilitation might benefit from shorter time constants to show precise muscle activation timing, while relaxation training often works better with longer, smoother displays. The vertical scale, resolution, of displays also requires careful consideration. Too narrow a scale might cut off higher activity levels, while too wide a scale might make smaller changes invisible. Modern software often allows automatic scaling, but manual adjustment can help focus attention on clinically relevant changes. Artifacts, understanding and managing signal contamination. Eric Pieper encourages practitioners to deepen their skill in artifact recognition by deliberately creating artifacts with their equipment. This hands-on approach fosters familiarity with both the visual signatures of artifacts and their effects on calculated metrics such as amplitude, frequency, and variability. Observing how each artifact distorts the raw signal waveform and alters data interpretation helps clinicians and technicians distinguish true physiological responses from contamination. Pieper reassures users that they should not fear damaging their equipment through this process. Modern biofeedback systems are robust and designed for practical experimentation. By intentionally generating common artifacts, such as movement, respiration irregularities, or loose electrodes, practitioners become more adept at identifying and addressing them during actual training sessions. Rich Sherman emphasizes a cautious and critical relationship with biofeedback instrumentation. His first principle warns against placing blind trust in equipment readings, reminding practitioners that devices can misrepresent the physiological state if they are improperly set or contaminated. Sherman advocates for self-familiarization with one's typical resting values, heart rate, temperature, and skin conductance, so that clinicians can serve as reference instruments. This baseline knowledge supports rapid error detection. Sherman also recommends a tracking test in which the biofeedback signal is compared to the client's observable behavior. For example, for a frontal placement over the forehead, you might instruct your client, "Please gently tighten the muscles in your forehead for a few seconds and then allow them to relax." The integrated SEMG signal should increase during the contraction phase and decrease during the relaxation phase. Equally important is inspecting the raw waveform for telltale signs of contamination, such as flatlining, signal dropouts, or high-frequency noise. When artifacts are discovered, Sherman insists on applying the best practices outlined in training materials to cleanse the data stream, ensuring that interpretations remain physiologically valid and clinically useful. Together, these perspectives offer a comprehensive foundation for artifact management in psychophysiological assessment and training. The challenge of artifacts represents one of the most critical aspects of biofeedback practice. Artifacts are false signals that can contaminate our recordings, potentially leading to incorrect clinical decisions if not properly identified and managed. Think of artifacts like static on a phone call. They interfere with the message we're trying to receive. Let's start with the most ubiquitous artifact source, 50 or 60 Hz interference from electrical power lines. This artifact is so pervasive in modern environments that it's often referred to as line noise. Every electrical outlet, fluorescent light, and piece of electronic equipment in your clinic potentially contributes to this interference. Imagine a choir of tiny electrical voices, all singing at exactly 50 or 60 Hz, depending on your country's power system, trying to drown out the biological signals we want to measure. The impact of line noise becomes particularly evident when someone turns on a fluorescent light near your recording equipment. The EMG signal may suddenly exhibit rhythmic fluctuations unrelated to muscle activity. I once worked with a practitioner who couldn't understand why their readings were consistently higher in the morning. It turned out that the overhead fluorescent lights, which were turned on at the start of each day, were the culprit. Steps to minimize 50 or 60 Hz artifact. 1. Engage a 50 or 60 Hz notch filter. 2. Position the encoder box 3 feet, 1 meter, from electronic equipment and power outlets. 3. Avoid electrically noisy light fixtures, such as fluorescent ones. 4. Select a narrow bandpass, 100 to 200 Hz instead of 20 to 500 Hz. 5. Carefully prepare the skin and apply pre-gelled electrodes. 6. Confirm low and balanced impedance, under 10 kiloohms and balanced within 5 kiloohms. If the impedance is too high or imbalanced, redo skin preparation and apply new pre-gelled electrodes. 7. Remove any unused sensor cables from the encoder box. ECG, electrocardiogram, artifact presents another common challenge, especially when recording from upper body muscles. Each heartbeat produces an electrical signal strong enough to be detected by EMG electrodes, particularly in areas such as the upper trapezius. This artifact appears as regular spikes in the EMG signal, occurring at the heart rate. The challenge is that these spikes can be mistaken for muscle tension, potentially confusing both clinician and client about the level of muscle relaxation achieved. Steps to minimize ECG artifact. 1. Place sensors diagonally to the heart. 2. Space sensors 1 centimeter apart. 3. Enable an ECG notch filter. 4. Select a narrow bandpass, 100 to 500 Hz instead of 20 to 500 Hz. Movement artifacts occur when electrode cables move or when electrodes shift on the skin. Think of it like trying to listen to headphones with a loose connection. Any movement of the wire creates noise. This becomes particularly challenging when working with active clients or during rehabilitation exercises. Proper cable management and secure electrode attachment help minimize these artifacts. However, they cannot be eliminated in dynamic situations. Steps to minimize movement artifact. 1. Instruct your client to limit their movement and confirm their compliance. 2. Secure the sensors with adhesive collars and tape the sensor cable to your client's blouse or shirt, as well as to the chair at several points. Crosstalk represents a more subtle form of artifact when our electrodes pick up activity from muscles other than the target muscle. This is like trying to listen to one conversation in a crowded room and picking up bits of other discussions. While sometimes unavoidable, Crosstalk becomes particularly problematic when working with smaller muscles or when precise muscle isolation is important for rehabilitation. Steps to minimize crosstalk artifact. 1. Place electrodes along muscle striations. 2. Space the electrodes close together. 3. Select a narrow bandpass, 100 to 200 Hz instead of 20 to 500 Hz. 4. Position your client's body so that their antagonist muscles are inactive. Modern biofeedback systems offer several tools for managing artifacts. Notch filters can reduce 50 or 60 Hz line noise, though at the cost of potentially removing some valid EMG signal in that frequency range. High-pass filters help reduce movement artifacts, which typically occur at lower frequencies than genuine EMG activity. Software can often automatically detect and mark sections of data contaminated by artifacts, allowing clinicians to exclude these segments from analysis. The key to effective artifact management lies in prevention rather than correction. This includes careful attention to electrode placement and skin preparation, proper cable management, and thoughtful arrangement of the clinical space to minimize electrical interference. Sometimes, simply repositioning equipment or turning off unnecessary electronic devices can dramatically improve signal quality, normal values, and clinical computing. Understanding normal EMG values provides essential context for clinical decision-making, but interpreting these values requires careful consideration of multiple factors. Unlike blood pressure or body temperature, which have relatively standardized normal ranges, EMG measurements are remarkably relative and context-dependent. Consider a simple example: measuring resting muscle tension in the frontalis, forehead, muscle. While we generally expect values below 3 microvolts during relaxation for small to moderate-sized muscles, this normal value depends on numerous factors: electrode placement, narrow versus wide, bandpass filter settings, narrow versus wide, the amount of subcutaneous fat, client position, and even the specific equipment being used. A reading of 5 microvolts on one system might correspond to 8 microvolts on another due to different processing methods. The impact of adipose tissue deserves special attention. Subcutaneous fat acts as an electrical insulator, effectively filtering the EMG signal before it reaches our electrodes. This means that two clients with identical muscle tension might produce different EMG readings simply because of variations in body composition. Clinicians must consider this when comparing measurements between different body sites or between different clients. During muscle relaxation training, many clinicians aim to help clients achieve EMG levels below 1 microvolt. However, this goal should be viewed as a general guideline rather than a rigid target. Some clients might achieve significant symptom relief at slightly higher levels, while others might need to reach even lower values for therapeutic benefit. The key is tracking individual progress and correlating EMG values with subjective improvement. The integration of computers into biofeedback practice has revolutionized our ability to collect, analyze, and interpret physiological data. Modern systems can simultaneously record multiple channels of information, perform complex mathematical analyses in real time, and present data in engaging, interactive displays. This technological evolution has expanded both the scope and sophistication of biofeedback interventions. Consider power spectral analysis, made possible through computerized fast Fourier transform, FFT, calculations. This technique breaks down complex EMG signals into their component frequencies, providing insights into muscle fatigue, recruitment patterns, and the presence of artifacts. What once required expensive specialized equipment can now be performed in real time on standard computer hardware. The ability to store and analyze session data over time has transformed how we track client progress. Modern software can generate trend reports, calculate statistical measures of improvement, and even suggest protocol adjustments based on client performance. This wealth of data helps clinicians make more informed decisions about treatment progression and effectiveness. However, the computerization of biofeedback brings its own challenges. These systems can be sources of electrical interference, potentially contaminating the very signals they're meant to measure. Proper electrical isolation becomes crucial not just for signal quality, but for client safety. Additionally, the complexity of modern software requires practitioners to develop new technical competencies while maintaining focus on the therapeutic relationship. The future of biofeedback computing points toward even greater integration with other technologies. Cloud-based storage of session data, machine learning algorithms for pattern recognition, and remote monitoring capabilities are already emerging. These advances promise to make biofeedback more accessible and effective while raising important questions about data security and clinical best practices. Individual differences in EMG measurements. EMG measurements vary significantly across age groups, gender, and athletic status, making standardized normal values challenging to establish. These differences stem from physiological variations in muscle fiber composition, muscle mass, subcutaneous fat distribution, and neuromuscular recruitment patterns. Age-related changes particularly impact EMG readings. As we age, several factors alter muscle electrical activity. Older adults typically show decreased motor unit firing rates and increased motor unit action potential duration. This means that even when exerting the same relative force, an older adult might display different EMG patterns than a younger person. The aging process also involves a gradual loss of muscle mass, sarcopenia, and changes in muscle fiber type distribution, generally favoring type 1, slow twitch, fibers. These changes often result in lower amplitude EMG signals for a given task in older populations. Gender differences in EMG measurements largely reflect variations in body composition and muscle fiber characteristics. Women typically have a higher percentage of body fat than men, which affects signal conduction to surface electrodes. The greater subcutaneous tissue in women often results in lower amplitude EMG readings for the same relative muscle force. Additionally, differences in muscle fiber size and distribution between genders can impact EMG frequency characteristics. Women often show lower median frequencies in their EMG power spectrum, particularly during sustained contractions. Athletic training creates distinct EMG patterns that differ from those of sedentary individuals. Athletes typically demonstrate more efficient muscle recruitment patterns, often achieving the same force output with lower overall EMG amplitude. This efficiency results from enhanced motor unit synchronization and improved neuromuscular coordination. However, athletes can also generate higher peak EMG amplitudes during maximal contractions due to their ability to recruit more motor units simultaneously. For specific muscle groups, we see considerable variation across populations. In the upper trapezius, for instance, resting values typically fall below 5 microvolts in healthy individuals, but athletes might show even lower resting values due to better muscle control. During maximal voluntary contractions, trained athletes might generate significantly higher EMG amplitudes than untrained individuals, reflecting their enhanced ability to activate muscle fibers. These differences make it crucial for clinicians to establish individual baselines rather than relying solely on population norms. A normal reading for a 25-year-old male athlete might be entirely different from what's normal for a 65-year-old sedentary woman, even when measuring the same muscle group. The key is to track changes relative to the individual's own baseline and to consider their specific demographic and training background when interpreting EMG data. Sport-specific adaptations add another layer of complexity. Athletes in different sports develop unique muscle activation patterns optimized for their specific activities. A gymnast's EMG profile during certain movements might look quite different from a long-distance runner's, reflecting their different training adaptations and movement requirements. These sport-specific patterns should be considered when using EMG in athletic training or rehabilitation contexts. Practical takeaways. Practical takeaways for monitoring the EMG. Monitoring electromyographic, EMG, activity requires more than attaching electrodes and observing a numerical readout. It involves understanding the underlying physiology, instrumentation, and potential sources of error that can obscure or distort the data. EMG signals represent muscle electrical activity, not force or motion, and are measured in microvolts, a scale that can be easily overwhelmed by noise. Clinicians must ensure low and balanced skin electrode impedance to preserve signal integrity, which depends on proper skin preparation, appropriate gel application, and electrode type. High or imbalanced impedance can mask true muscle activity or exaggerate artifacts, making strong contractions appear weak or creating false signals during rest. Artifact contamination from environmental sources such as fluorescent lighting and electronic devices, as well as physiological and movement artifacts, can seriously compromise EMG data. Using differential amplifiers with high common mode rejection ratios, selecting optimal filter settings, and correctly positioning electrodes can mitigate this risk. For instance, a narrow bandpass filter may help reduce environmental noise but might underestimate higher frequency muscle activity. Conversely, a wide bandpass captures more physiological detail but admits more artifacts. Proper hardware configuration and informed software settings are essential for accurate monitoring. Electrode placement must reflect both anatomical knowledge and task-specific objectives. Active electrodes must be positioned along the muscle belly, not near tendinous insertions or adjacent muscles, to ensure specificity and amplitude accuracy. Regular impedance checks and tracking tests should confirm that the EMG signal accurately reflects intended muscle activity, rather than noise or interference from neighboring muscles. Clinicians should also recognize that EMG readings are inherently relative and influenced by factors such as adiposity, electrode spacing, and amplifier characteristics. Consequently, comparisons between sessions, clients, or devices are valid only when these variables are controlled. Accurate EMG monitoring, thus, depends on an integrated understanding of instrumentation, physiology, and clinical context. Conclusion: the art and science of EMG biofeedback. The journey from biological signal to meaningful feedback represents a remarkable fusion of physiology, electronics, and clinical practice. Understanding EMG biofeedback instrumentation isn't just about mastering technical specifications. It's about appreciating how each component contributes to our ability to help clients achieve their therapeutic goals. The complexity we've explored, from electrode placement and impedance testing to signal processing and artifact management, might seem overwhelming at first. However, this complexity serves a profound purpose, making invisible physiological processes visible and controllable. When we understand how our equipment works, we can better interpret the stories it tells about our clients' bodies and minds. Consider how far the field has come. What began as simple voltage measurements has evolved into sophisticated, computer-based systems capable of real-time analysis and engaging feedback displays. Yet the fundamental principles remain unchanged: the need for careful attention to signal quality, understanding of normal values across different populations, and recognition of how individual differences affect our measurements. The influence of age, gender, athletic status, and other individual characteristics on EMG measurements reminds us that biofeedback is not a one-size-fits-all intervention. Each client brings their unique physiological baseline, influenced by factors ranging from body composition to training history. This variability demands both technical expertise and clinical wisdom, knowing not just how to obtain clean signals, but also how to interpret them in the context of each client's specific situation. Looking ahead, biofeedback instrumentation continues to evolve. Advances in computing power, wireless technology, and signal processing algorithms promise even more sophisticated tools for clinical practice. However, these advances will always rely on the foundational principles we've discussed: the careful preparation of recording sites, understanding of signal properties, and management of artifacts. Perhaps most importantly, this technical knowledge serves a deeper purpose: enhancing our ability to help clients achieve meaningful change. Whether we're helping an athlete optimize performance, teaching a client to manage chronic pain, or assisting in rehabilitation after injury, our understanding of biofeedback instrumentation enables us to provide more effective, evidence-based care. The marriage of technical expertise with clinical skill creates the conditions for therapeutic success. When we truly understand our tools, their capabilities and limitations, as well as their proper use and potential pitfalls, we can focus more fully on what matters most: the human being seeking our help. In this way, mastery of biofeedback instrumentation becomes not just a technical achievement, but a pathway to more effective healing.